This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Another economic snapshot.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. The job losses are still pretty scary, but the continuing story sounds a little nicer. People continue their economic aversion to shopping, and the spray painters in Soho, well, that message isn't resonating very well. It's the morning open. We ask, where's Wall Street? Market's pretty much flat right now. The Dow down about 10 points or a tenth of a percent, 86.65 where it stands right now. The NASDAQ up about a third of a percent, S&P 500 pretty much flat. European markets mostly up right now. The Bank of England and European Central Bank announced today their rates won't change for now. Asian shares closed lower today. All right, Doug Forman is Director of Equities at Highmark Capital. He joins us live from San Francisco this morning. Hi, Doug.
Good morning, Steve.
So jobless claims fell to 621,000 last week. An important thing happened, though, in this morning's report, and continuing claims actually fell as well. No record high this week. That's the first time that's happened since January. What does that tell us about the job picture and a specific type of recovery?
Well, the job picture, I think, is in the process of stabilizing. It's getting, as you point out, slightly better. It tends to be a lagging indicator when you're coming out of a recession, so I think the type of recovery that we're ultimately going to see is a little bit unclear yet. But I think it does add to the evidence that things have stabilized, and hopefully we'll be getting better here.
Government also gave us a revision this morning of productivity in the first quarter. It came in and adjusted 1.6%. That was double the estimate from last month. Doug, what does this say about how businesses are handling the downturn?
I think it speaks volumes about how businesses have reacted to this downturn. They've done a magnificent job of reducing their costs and getting their inventories under control in a very, very quick fashion. And I think to show this type of productivity growth in this kind of economic environment, which is still quite punkish by anybody's standards, is amazing.
Retail, and very, very quickly, Doug, retail not so good. Costco, Hot Topic had lower sales, but discounters fared better. What's it going to take for people to get to shopping again? Just a few seconds.
I think consumers are going to have to feel more comfortable about their savings, and their savings rate is heading up, and it's probably got to go a little bit higher and pay down some debt and get their mortgages under control. And I think as that deleveraging process continues, people will start to spend a little bit more, but it's still they're still watching their dollars.
Doug Forman, Director of Equities at Highmark Capital. Thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
Bankrupt automaker GM is trying to figure out if it'll shutter even more factories in the third quarter to save more money. You know who else is prone to bankruptcy? People with a serious medical issue. According to a new study, American families are one major illness away from going broke. The American Journal of Medicine says medical bills are involved in more than 60% of personal bankruptcies here in the United States. Tamara Keith has more.
75% of the bankruptcies related to medical expenses hit people covered by health insurance. Dr. David Himmelstein is an associate professor at Harvard Medical School and one of the authors of the study.
Most of us have insurance policies that if you're really sick, they are like an umbrella that just melts in the rain. They don't actually offer you the coverage you think you have.
The study is based on a survey of families who filed for bankruptcy in early 2007. Himmelstein says most of the people affected were well-educated, owned homes, and had middle-class jobs.
We looked at medical bankruptcies back in 2001, and there's been a 50% increase just in the last 6 years.
Robert Zirkelbach maintains insurance coverage isn't the problem. He's with the trade group America's Health Insurance Plans.
What we need to do is look at what is driving up the cost of care. Why are is utilization skyrocketed, and what can we do as a nation to get those costs down?
Healthcare reform is on the agenda in Washington this summer. I'm Tamara Keith for Marketplace.
You're listening to The Morning Report for Thursday, June 4th, 2009 at marketplace.org. President Obama is in Cairo, Egypt today, where he gave a major speech about terrorism and religious tolerance and economically the U.S.'s involvement in the rebuilding of some pretty tumultuous places.
Now, we also know that military power alone is not going to solve the problems in Afghanistan and Pakistan. That's why we plan to invest $1.5 billion each year over the next 5 years to partner with Pakistanis to build schools and hospitals, roads and businesses, and hundreds of millions to help those who've been displaced. That's why we are providing more than $2.8 billion to help Afghans develop their economy and deliver services that people depend on.
Some criticize the president for going to Egypt in the first place because of the country's human rights record. Others say it's about time the U.S. set a friendlier tone with Muslims. His appearance there highlights some of the economic problems it faces. Mehret Mabrouk is a visiting fellow at the Sorbonne Center for Middle East Policy at the Brookings Institution. Good morning.
Good morning.
How is the economy in Egypt doing these days?
The economy has, of course, been hit by the financial downturn like everyone else. But the general feeling is that it's not as bad as it could have been. Now, you want to bear in mind that better than might have been expected is still not good enough for most people. And I think many people have, especially at the lower levels of the socioeconomic strata, have felt the downturn keenly.
What does Egypt, do you think, need to do to boost its own economy? What can they do sort of internally?
Well, it's actually a very, very good question because it's terrifically complicated. But I think for an economy to grow, you need self-reliance and you need trade. And trade means investment from other countries. Grants and subsidies and aid from the U.S. is great, but I think people would also like to see increased investment.
Anything else that maybe the people of Egypt would like to see from President Obama while he's there?
That's a very, very, very long list. But I think really what everyone wants to know is that he's going to follow that speech up with something tangible that we can live by.
All right. Mehret Mabrouk, visiting fellow at the Sorbonne Center for Middle East Policy over at the Brookings Institution. Thank you for joining us this morning.
You're most welcome.
20 years ago today, Chinese soldiers fired on their own citizens near Tiananmen Square. But inside China, log on and you can't get much info about it. That's a major challenge to American.com firms trying to profit off of the world's largest internet population. From Shanghai, Marketplace's Scott Tong reports.
Try to Flickr your photos or Twitter your blog in China today, and you come to this digital destination. Page load error. China's net police have cut off access to these sites, plus MySpace, Wikipedia, and YouTube. It's the digital equivalent of the real-life fence that went up around Tiananmen Square last night. Common wisdom says Beijing wants to keep out any inflammatory videos or commentary that might stir up the masses on this 20th anniversary. For US.com firms, it all makes for virtual indigestion. David Wolf heads a corporate advisory in Beijing.
It's sort of the cost of doing business here, the price that you pay for access to, you know, hundreds of millions of eyeballs.
And the cost is high, since the American firms, by and large, are losing to Chinese competitors. The Chinese sites steer clear of the censors by filtering out touchy content. Wolf thinks the Americans need to play by the same rules to win here.
Or you can call it in-house editors, you can call it self-censorship, you can call it whatever you want. If you don't want to make those compromises, don't come to China.
But opponents of those compromises say the American firms should defend free speech around the world. Beijing will likely unblock sites like YouTube and Twitter in the next couple of days, at least until the next anniversary. In Shanghai, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
The Food and Drug Administration is taking a fresh look at the plastic hardener bisphenol A, commonly known as BPA. Last year, it ruled the chemical safe in things such as baby bottles. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Sarah Gardner has the latest.
This week, Connecticut is expected to ban BPA in baby bottles, cups, and food containers. Some other states aren't far behind. Now, the FDA is revisiting a Bush administration conclusion that BPA is safe in food and drink containers. Janet Noodleman at the Breast Cancer Fund believes the U.S. will regulate BPA.
The science is there. The public demand is there. The more progressive elements in manufacturing are there. And policymakers are responding to public outrage around bisphenol A.
The chemical industry says that outrage has been stoked by overzealous health advocates and a biased media, but the American Chemistry Council now says it welcomes the FDA's second look. The council's Steve Henches.
It's in the public's best interest. We hope that a timely decision based on the science will give the public the confidence it deserves in the safety of products made from bisphenol A.
Of course, advocates like Noodleman are hoping the FDA will conclude just the opposite. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
Mortgage interest rates have surged over the past couple of weeks to the highest levels seen since January. As a result, a lot of consumers are thinking twice about refinancing those homes. The number of mortgage applications has been declining. Marketplace's Jeff Tyler looks at what it all means for the housing industry.
Mortgage rates are closely tied to U.S. Treasury bonds. Investors worried about the ballooning federal deficit are shying away from buying the government's debt. The Federal Reserve has been pumping money into T-bills to keep rates down. But that may not be enough to bring mortgage rates back to the historic lows seen in March. Gus Fauché is director of macroeconomics at Moody'sEconomy.com.
We may return to those lows briefly, depending on what the Fed does, but I think over the long run, mortgage rates will be moving higher.
Some consumers considering refinancing are betting that the upward trend is temporary. Jim Pear is incoming president of the National Association of Mortgage Brokers.
They're going to wait a little bit longer to refi, hoping that rates will come back down a little bit.
At the same time, new rules for people purchasing a home are also putting a damper on the mortgage business. Pear says stricter credit and income requirements are keeping a lot of people out of the housing market. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
As General Motors and Chrysler work through their bankruptcies, we're getting more clues about what the market might look like on the other side. Auto sales are way down compared to a year ago. They're off 34% from May of 2008. Still, month-to-month sales seem to have rebounded a bit from April as dealers offered big cash incentives and slashed prices. But can the automakers really expect a rebound long-term? Here's Mitchell Hartman.
29-year-old Kenneth McNay is the kind of consumer who makes auto companies dream of better times to come.
I've actually switched cars quite a bit, and I kind of like getting in a new car every year.
But a certain iffiness creeps into McNay's voice when I ask if he and his wife are ready to buy right now.
Mostly it's just been the cost associated with putting down and then knowing I'm going to have to keep paying. For me, it's just too much to think I could actually make that decision and know I'd be happy for a good 5 to 7 years.
What about every 3 years? That's what automakers used to count on.
I think the days of buying a new car every 3 years are over.
Gary Chasen studies the auto industry at Clark University.
I think the days of investing in a car to keep it running are just starting now. Cars are more expensive, consumers are more wary, and as a result, they're going to be very hesitant.
That hesitation has partly to do with finances. It's harder to get a loan these days, especially one that stretches over 6 years and offers lower monthly payments. Consumers like Kenneth McNay are also waiting to buy because they want to see what new green cars come down the road.
We want to see the technology develop where hybrids are much more common or even electric vehicles are becoming common.
And when he does plunge in, McNay says it won't necessarily be for a GM brand. He currently drives a Chevy Tracker. He wants to hold off at least a year to see how the company is doing. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Some of the graffiti artists of New York have their own thoughts on the recession, but some business owners in the Soho neighborhood would rather they keep those thoughts to themselves. Here's Sally Herships.
Martin Kappa is a real estate agent who's been noticing the recession-oriented graffiti in Soho.
I saw "Where's my bailout?" Then I saw one, "When am I going to get my money?" or "I'm homeless." So the graffiti's more sophisticated, if that makes sense.
Just to be clear here, we're not talking about tagging, which is spray painting names or gang symbols over and over. This is street art. Kappa says when he was a kid, he did some tagging himself, but now he's reformed. He says graffiti can harm sales and property values.
It affects everyone. Store owners, small businesses, we're all working to try and stay afloat here.
But graffiti can also be big business. works by the British artist Banksy pull in tens of thousands of pounds. Oded Halakhmi is an Iraqi artist and gallery owner in Soho. He says he loves the freedom available to artists in America, but he says graffiti has a place.
You can make flyer and hand it to me and do T-shirt as a creative protest, but paint it on the wall of the gallery, not on the wall of our building.
A few blocks away on Broadway, a graffiti artist who calls himself NY Steve is spray painting hats for tourists. Nearby, Anthony Vasquez and a couple other artists have a table set up selling graffiti on canvas. I ask Vasquez what he says to people who are angry when their property gets tagged.
If you don't like noise, if you don't want people to honk their horns, then you shouldn't be here. It's those little imperfections that like make it beautiful.
As unpopular as graffiti is with local business owners, there is a demand for it. Sarah Martineau is a fan. There's a stencil outside the nearby salon where she works.
It says sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And that is the kind of graffiti that I support.
But Martineau's not responsible for cleaning it up.
I'm a renter. It's not my problem.
In New York, I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
Hope you can check us out at our website, marketplace.org. You can leave your mark there without the messy paint. Our online host and blogger, Scott Jagow, he's sharing his thoughts. You can share your thoughts with him, too, this morning at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.